Good morning. Thank you for waking up to come see this talk. So what I do is a little different from probably most of the talks I think you've seen here. I'm more of an agroecologist, so I incorporate ecological theory into what I do, into vegetable crop production. So my dissertation research has been about plant functional diversity, and today I'll be talking about how that leads to increased yields in a low-input organic intercropping system. So just to give you a little background, traditional small farmers in especially tropical areas have long used intercropping systems where each species occupies a different niche in the system, so they have different growth forms, creating this complex multi-layer ecosystem. Okay. And as many of you may be familiar, the Native Americans used a kind of similar concept with the three sisters or four sisters intercropping combination of squash, maize, and beans, where each crop kind of filled a function in the system, and they each contributed differentially to all the overall functioning of the ecosystem. So squash was sort of your low-growing smother crop to smother weeds and retain moisture, shade the soil. Excuse me. Maize was your sort of taller crop that act as structural support for the beans, and the beans, of course, being your nitrogen fixer. So in ecological theory, we know that diversification of plant species in natural ecosystems has been shown to increase net primary productivity, basically plant biomass. And that's due to a complex set of interactions. So differences in inter versus intra-species competition facilitation, and complementary use of resources or niche partitioning. And I can go into those further later. So the overall question is, we know that functionally diverse plant communities in natural ecosystems can lead to overyielding, that is, increase in biomass for a species relative to that species in monocrop, and that increases total community productivity. And since diversity studies focus on a number of species solely, we decided, well, can a functionally diverse cropping system lead to an increase in total food production? So we're just replacing the biomass aspect of natural systems with food production, right? Fruit. Oops. So this study was conducted on Texas A&M Horticulture Farm in College Station, Texas. The field was prepared with a chisel plow, then middle busted, and then solarized for 1 to 1.5 months in both 2011 and 2012. And then I used a row maker to make my rows and then install drip tape simultaneously. So these are 5-foot rows. They were open rows, so no plastic culture was used, no plastic. And these were double rows. And it was a randomized complete block with 3 replicates. So as the title of my presentation implies, it's a very low input type system. So in 2011, based on soil analysis, we decided there was enough nitrogen and we wouldn't add any more. 2012, because a lot of it was used up, I went ahead and added organic granular chicken manure based fertilizer, and that rate was based on the recommendations from the soil testing lab. And in terms of spraying, I did spray a little bit of pyrethrum and neem to control insects, especially the first year. But I really didn't spray very much at all. And irrigation was adjusted based on potential evapotranspiration and on just visual scouting of the field. So this is what the field looked like when I was solarizing. So I used 5 species. I used 1 non-vegetable crop, peanut, watermelon, okra, cowpea, and pepper. So very much southern type crops. And these were selected because this was done in the middle of the summer in Texas, so they had to be fairly heat tolerant. Selected them for the desired architecture and the function that we assigned to them. No known adverse effects on other companion species. And I sort of use this as a sort of a model, as model crops for this diversified integrated crop management program that I would like to develop in the future. So again, these are the five species representing four different families. And so watermelon was selected for the its low growth form. That would be my smother crop. A peanut for its nitrogen fixation primarily. Okra was the taller crop and kind of has bigger, showy flowers, so I thought maybe it can act as a pollinator attractant as well. Cowpea, another nitrogen fixer. And then I decided to throw in another kind of wild card from the solanaceous family, because some of the, especially pepper, has been known to act as a potential chemical pest barrier and weed allelopathy. So, and those are the varieties that we select, that I selected. I won't go into too much detail, but I did select a mini variety of watermelon for two reasons. One, they could tolerate tighter spacing, and this was pretty tight spacing that I used. And since this is geared toward kind of small-scale production, CSA scale, urban farmers as well, I think they'd be more likely to use smaller watermelon, kind of personal size watermelon. So I won't go too much into this, but this is basically the treatments that I had. I had five treatments, intercropping treatments, and five controls, each of those species in monocrop. So IPW would be within row intercropping of peanut and watermelon. And I decided to try strip intercropping with peanut watermelon, so one row of peanut, another row of watermelon right next to each other, to see, you know, are there differences? Does it have to be that complex within row system? And then IPWO, just adding the okra, and then adding the cowpea, and so forth. So this is kind of what it would look like. So for example, in a peanut watermelon okra combination, the plants would be spaced 1 foot apart and a staggered double row pattern such as this. The reason I did that was because I wanted to maximize the interactions between the species, because that's the whole point of this. And I decided on 1 foot because that was sort of the average of the spacing requirements for the component species. So this is kind of what it would look like. You can't see it too well, but that's watermelon on the way left. You can see that they're kind of staggered. And there's monocrop of okra. And then this is what one of my replicates kind of look like. So if you're familiar with intercropping, a lot of times they'll use that land equivalent ratio as a way to test it. So land equivalent ratio is the ratio of the yield of each species intercropped to that species in monocrop, and then summed for all the species. Okay, so for example, intercropping of peanut watermelon, you get a monocrop yield of 33,000 kilograms per hectare. You get a yield of 13,000 in intercrop. You just take the ratio, 13,000 over 33, so you get 0.39. And you would do the same for the peanut and then add those. So your LER in this case would be 0.98. So basically values over 1 are what you want, because values over 1 would indicate over-yielding, right? And then we also did on per plant production, kilograms per plant. So what ended up happening, I didn't do a pilot study to see what the optimal planting times would be relative to each other. So the first year, watermelon pretty much took over and had a lot of watermelon. So you can see watermelon's kind of climbing over a lot of things here. Well, I decided in 2012 to alter the planting dates to give the other crops a chance, and okra took over. So then we had a lot of okra. So it was a reversal of dominance between the 2 years, which is kind of interesting in itself. So these are the results of the LER. So the LER in 2011, you can see four out of the five intercropping combinations. And I will mention that 2011, because of later planting, peanut wasn't harvested. So I adjusted these LERs to account for that unharvested area. That's why you don't see peanut in this first graph here. But you see four out of the five combinations over-yielded, had a total LER of greater than 1. And I want to kind of point out these two in particular, the peanut watermelon okra, peanut watermelon okra cowpea, because if you look at 2012, three out of the five also over-yielded, but consistently these two performed about the same, even though okra was the more dominant crop the second year. So that's pretty interesting that regardless of which crop was dominant, they still yielded very similar values and over-yielded both years. So what these arrows indicate as well is if a crop under or overperformed, and how that was evaluated is, so if you have a five species intercropping, you would expect each crop to contribute 0.2 to the overall LER, right, 20%. So if it was below 20%, that would be underperforming. If it was above, it would be overperforming, right? So okra, when it was dominant, overperformed, and all of its component species underperformed except for peanut. And you can see here watermelon overperformed consistently, and all the other species underperformed. You kind of expect that. Some will be winners, some will be losers in this kind of system. So per plant basis, you can see the first year watermelon did really well, and it did really well, especially on a per plant basis for the four and five species combinations. And I will say the second year, downy mildew, we had a pretty bad downy mildew infestation, so that's why the yields are a lot lower as well. In the second year, you can see okra was quite the opposite. Second year, they did really well, but it's still with the four and five species combinations, and three did really well compared to monoculture. So they're producing more on a per plant basis. Same for peanut, did really well in three and four combination. And pepper really didn't, see much difference. And cowpea did better in monocrop than it did in intercropping, which is why it underperformed, right? So conclusions are that a functionally diverse intercropping system can lead to overyielding and increased per plant productivity. So even though changes in planting dates altered the species dominance, we still got similar LERs between the 2 years, especially for the three and four species combinations. And of course, the alternation of dominance highlights the importance of planting day and seedling establishment. So what we found out from this was that plant diversity theory can be applied to agroecosystems in terms of fruit yield rather than biomass, right? And I think this can be used as a model system for small-scale producers with limited space, because they'll be able to produce more on a per area basis. And two important things that I learned were that, you know, proper spacing between individuals in mixed planting should maximize those facilitative interactions while trying to minimize competitive interactions. But more research is needed, I think, in this area. And of course, selection of appropriate varieties for the desired function is key. I was very diligent when I selected the varieties of each species. So I'd like to thank a number of people, but especially Southern Sarah, because they provided the funding for this research. And I'd be happy to take any questions. Yes.
The system like that obviously doesn't lend itself to mechanical harvesting, but how hard was the hand harvesting, you know, digging things out from other things?
Not hard at all, actually. The only thing, I mean, this wouldn't be practical probably for peanuts, because that was a little more labor intensive, but the watermelon wasn't an issue. The pepper wasn't really an issue either. None of them really were an issue. I mean, you know, you had second year when okra was a lot bigger and stuff. I mean, it could kind of get in the way, but I don't really see that being a huge issue if a small-scale producer wanted to utilize this, because they'd be hand-harvesting anyway. So, yes?
I noticed that all of the crops were, you know, between that 80 and, you know, 100-day to harvest dates, and so a lot of intercropping systems will employ a short time to fill in the space prior to canopy closure within your longer ones. Is there a reason why, say, a 30 or 40, 45-day like brassica wasn't included in the intercropping mix, because that really can bump up that over yielding capacity.
So is there a reason why I selected kind of longer growing?
Sure.
Right. So I didn't select the brassica because of the heat primarily. I kind of wanted to play it safe because this was my dissertation research,
right.
So I wanted to have some results. but so that's primarily why. Although I would say cowpea was shorter, and cowpea was ready to harvest a lot earlier than the other crops.
Okay. 14th, super quick, like 30 seconds.
Yes.
I did. I didn't include it here, but I did look at weed biomass and then a number of soil aspects as well. The watermelon reduced. Any time watermelon was included in intercropping the first year, the weed biomass was drastically reduced. And the second year, we had a lot of biomass overall because of the okra, but the only, you know, pepper in monoculture was the one that had the highest weed biomass.
Thank you.
Thank you.